This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a podcast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9.
I'm here with David Gator. Welcome, David.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, you're over here for GX at the moment and then came down from Melbourne just for a bit of a break.
Yeah. I had a couple of days left over in my trip, so I thought I would swing down to Melbourne. I was here 10 years ago, so I could catch up with friends.
That is quite the gap in time.
Yeah. It's been too long.
Has much changed? Do you have many memories from back then?
Well, I was only here for 2 days last time as well, but it was right at the beginning of the trip.
Okay.
So I was very jet-lagged, and so my memories aren't very distinct.
So now you get to have a better look around.
Yes, exactly.
It's been some lovely weather these couple of days.
Too hot. It's winter back home. It was minus 10 when I left, so to come to a place where it's in the 30s, I'm just dying, really.
Getting your temperature bearings.
Yeah.
So you were down for GX. What did you think of GX Australia?
Oh, it's I've actually had been distinguished to be a guest at every Gamer X so far. So this is my fourth one.
Jealous.
Yeah.
I haven't been to any of the US ones. Actually, I haven't been to the US, but I'd love to.
Yeah, it's actually pretty busy. I've watched it build every year. I really enjoy it. The Gamer X Australia was really great. I mean, someone asked me once what was different about mm-hmm. Gamer X or all the Gamer X's I've been to versus other gaming conventions. And I said, well, the thing about most gaming conventions you go to is that the people that are there pretty much for themselves. They're sort of in their own group or clique, and they don't really meet a lot. And there's some, there's some interaction going on, but it's a lot of very excited, but often either sullen or sort of isolated people. And I find that GamerX seems like everybody is just very happy for everyone else. They're happy that everybody else is there. And it's a very different atmosphere. I quite enjoy it.
Everything feels very comfortable. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
Like, it's you don't see any drag queens at any other conventions. That's something
true.
That we can say that GX has and PAX doesn't.
Yes. Well, it is a great atmosphere. I think you have a group of people that are so... I remember when the first GamerX went up, and it probably still happens. Who am I kidding? There was some question as to, well, why do you need a GamerX? Why do you need a convention for gay people? Aren't regular conventions enough?
It happens
blah, blah, blah.
Every time.
It happens every time. And the thing is, somebody who isn't gay would never understand how you have to have your filter up, right?
Mm-hmm.
At everything you go to, whether it's a regular convention, whether it's everyday life, you live with this filter day in, day out, where you have to be considerate of other people's comfort levels.
Yes.
And never mind possible danger to yourself. That can be an issue. I find it pretty rare, but then I'm from Canada, so it doesn't come up that often. But you still have to be wary of what somebody else is going to be tolerant of or comfortable with. So you always have that active, and you don't really notice it all the time because it's constant, right? But when you have the chance to just let that drop, it is quite a liberating feeling. And somebody who is straight and or not a minority just would not understand what it's like to live with that day in and day out and what it means to not have to employ it.
Yeah, I'm sure our listeners could empathize there.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all, like, even just going down to the supermarket, there are ways that you feel like you want to act because it's fun and just being how you are.
Right.
But you can't because that's just how it is. I know my partner in particular doesn't like holding hands in public just in case something happens. Like, it may be completely unlikely, but there's still the possibility because you're not sure how other people are going
to
react.
Yeah, you have to censor yourself pretty much all the time. And it's not like, you know, given my druthers, I would, you know, flame out and, you know, burst into flames on a constant basis. However, even if just have always having that in the back of your mind and being wary of that, like, especially not being able to hold hands in public, you know, That's a limitation that's pretty hard to take.
Very. Sometimes it's fun just to flame out as well.
Right. Yeah. Sure. But then you face the consequences as well. And even if there are none, the fact that you have to be aware of the possibility is a limitation in and of itself.
And simply not something we had to consider when at GX.
Yeah. Yes. Everybody seemed very comfortable. I mean, it was a really good site for it too. It was large, so everybody had quite a bit of space. It was air conditioned, thank God. Thank you, Liam. Overall, it seemed like everybody was very, very chill. Lots of people meeting each other, and there was a real sense of community. And I think while there is an LGBT community, I don't think all gay people, especially all young gay people, are part of it or aware of it. So for them, it may have been their first sense that there is a community, that there are people out there just like them. Because even if they know other queer people, just sort of in general.
Yeah.
Even if they do know other queer people, those people might not be interested in geeky things, right? So it's nice to find other people who are interested in the exact same things you are.
Yep, we're comfortable and we already have something in common. So
yes, exactly.
Everyone's got something they can work with in such a situation. I really enjoyed the con myself.
Yeah.
Just on that topic, what's it like being at a con for you versus how it is normally in your real life? Because you're treated essentially like a god walking around GX. Everyone just loved it.
Yeah, well, it's a little strange just because I guess I'm famous in a very select group of people, yes. Right? So, I mean, my average everyday life, I don't really get recognized that much. And why would I? I certainly never expect it. But, you know, when I go to a con, suddenly there are people there that know my name, that are excited to see me and run up or get flustered in my presence. And it's like, how do you respond to that? I still get confused to this day, or someone tells me they read one of my books, and my first reaction is always, really? I'm just completely surprised. Someone read my book? Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was reading the Facebook comments. I just asked openly if anyone had any questions for you before we started doing this. And someone's like, I have this question I wanted to ask David myself, but I was so starstruck I couldn't deal with it. It's amazing. Beautiful, beautiful thing, GX. Just to switch over to your experience in the industry. Now, you worked on Dragon Age. That was your biggest series.
Yes. Well, that was the series that I was lead writer on. Mm-hmm. I was also lead writer on my very first gig as lead writer was at for an expansion for Neverwinter Nights. But after that, it was making the Dragon Age setting and being lead writer for the games.
Now, not all of our listeners are direct gamers. So right. If you could just tell us a bit about Dragon Age and what the game's like.
Well, it's a cinematic RPG, which means you're put in the role. Well, each game had a different main character. They tell very big fantasy stories, big epic stories, along the lines of I'd say Lord of the Rings. So that seems to be something that everyone's familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And you control a group of people that sort of back you up. So there is a combat element to it, although it has difficulty settings. So if that's not what you're into, it can be quite easy, but it's very story and relationship focused. There's that party of people that's with you. You delve into their stories, and sometimes you can have romances with them. That's a big focus of everyone's attention. And as you're going through the rest of the story and saving the world, these are long detailed experiences. I remember Dragon Age Inquisition, which is the last game that just came out.
Incredibly long experience.
Yeah, so that could last upwards of 120 hours, I'd say.
Definitely. So the story is exactly why I love Dragon Age and other BioWare titles as well. Just that's what people think of when they think of a BioWare game. Or
generally, either the story or the characters.
It's the story. That's what drives it, and the characters. During your period working in the video game industry, what was your favorite memory of your work?
My favorite memory, you know, there's probably quite a few I could pick, but if I wanted to pick something specific, it was probably when Dragon Age Inquisition came out. Dragon Age 2 before it had sort of a mixed reaction from the fans. It was a lot shorter in a game in length than Dragon Age Origins, and there was a number of things that were cut. As we made it in a year, which was a lot less than Dragon Age Origins was made in. And I think there are a lot of great things about it personally, but I think it suffered in comparison. So a lot of the fans were quite upset, and I felt like the Dragon Age team had something to kind of prove. We made Dragon Age Inquisition. So I remember the day that Dragon Age Inquisition was released, a lot of people from the Dragon Age team were on Twitter refreshing the review sites. It wasn't the release. It was just before the release when the embargo lifted on the reviews. Mm-hmm. So we were sort of refreshing all the review sites we could find because we knew a lot of them were going to post reviews for Dragon Age. We just wanted to see, because we had an idea that they might be positive. Because a number of the reviewers actually came in and played it or you know had done some interviews, so we thought, okay, the general sense seems to be that they liked it. A few of them were kind of middling on a few points. We really didn't know where it would land, because positive can mean anything from 80% to, you know, on higher, and we were hoping for higher. And when the first reviews started coming in, I think the first one we saw was 92. So we were just over the moon. Mark. Oh, that's really good. And the rest that followed were around there. And I think we were just hopeful for anything over 90, and at least initially. Because, I mean, over the long run, the review scores tend to come down a bit as other sites sort of pile on. And sometimes you get the sites that decide they're going to give them a 60 because they can.
They want to be edgy.
They want to be edgy, yeah. But I mean,
why did those people give them a 60? I wonder what went wrong.
It was nice to see it felt really validating to see that people enjoyed it, and that people were seeing the things that we want, you know, we put in there, we wanted them to see. And then of course when the game actually came out, the fans were kind of over the moon about it. So I mean, but that I remember that specific moment because we were all on Twitter at the same time, and it's like, "Oh, guys, did you see this?" and posting links to the ones that had already put something up, and kind of squeeing on publicly on Twitter. It was a really great feeling. I think the embargo lifted at midnight, and we were basically up, all of us, up till like 2 a.m. Oh my God. Tweeting about them.
That's incredible. See everyone, they're just like us, refreshing Twitter all the time. Now, you're quite a pioneer as far as LGBT themes in video games are concerned. Did you encounter any particular roadblocks when you were trying to have them introduced or write them into your plot lines?
You know, I don't really feel like a pioneer in that respect, just because I wasn't somebody who pushed it at my company. The team that first did it was the Jade. They made a game called Jade Empire, which was a mm-hmm. Chinese martial arts game, and I remember when it was announced that the team was intending to include two same-sex romances, I was floored. I guess I'd always assumed that wasn't something that anybody would ever tolerate. And I remember we had something very close to it in the game previous, Star Wars game. We worked on Knights of the Old Republic, but we kind of hit it. You know, it was a lesbian romance, and the character never really said "I love you" outright or made any overt indication that it was a romance. So I just figured, you know, that's as far as it could ever go. That, I mean, people have to remember this was over 10 years ago, and it was a very different gaming industry, right?
Where, definitely the entire media industry, even like we had tons of queer baiting like that, yeah, back then, where it's like, are they lesbians, are they gay? No, they're just really good friends.
Exactly. So I guess I just assumed that would never be. And I mean, it wasn't like I missed it, because I was just accustomed to that part of my life and my professional work were just completely separate. And I'm sure there's lots of people today who would have preferred it remain that way. But even so, when it happened, I was startled. So, I mean, as soon as it happened, I mean, I was working on the first Dragon Age game. And I asked my boss, I said, well, since the Jade Empire guys are doing it, can I put something in Dragon Age? And he was like, yeah. So and not only, yeah, it wasn't like I've never felt like I had to struggle at my company to include these things. It was encouraged. As a matter of fact, I think more often than not, I'm kind of pulling back from it a bit, just because I always worry at at the amount, if we put in too much gay content, that it could become known as sort of the gay game.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, how much do you credit that? But it's like, if you're looking at people who don't know that much about the game, but if all they hear is that
it's the gay game.
It's the gay game, regardless of all the other things that it may do, or even things, content they may have that would be more up someone's alley, they may just sort of dismiss it. So I've always had that in the back of my mind as well, but maybe it doesn't matter, because I think we're still well known for our representation and our
Oh, definitely. I mean, as progressive as Dragon Age Inquisition is, it's still quite the ways off of being the gay game compared to things like My Ex-Boyfriend is a Space Tyrant.
Yes, compared to games like that, sure. But by AAA standards, I think BioWare is well ahead of the curve.
Oh, definitely. I remember hearing that Dragon Age and Mass Effect allowed you to have gay characters. That was the reason why I picked them up initially. Because I was like, what? There are games where I can be gay? That's incredible. I need to play these. And yeah, that's what got me into it. So it's something that was needed at the time, and we didn't see nearly enough, and still probably don't see nearly enough, especially in a lot of RPGs where you get character creation, but you still, that's still completely omitted.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, I think it's happening more, but you also got to remember too, it's making what's referred to as minority content. And I don't mean minority as in minorities, mm-hmm. as in gay people or racial minorities. I mean, minority content is something that, okay, here's something that costs the same as all the other content you have. But if you have, if it's built in that only certain number of people are going to see it, the number is pretty small,
mm-hmm.
then the amount of effort you can put in it is therefore limited.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of different theories about the benefit of minority content. But I mean, you're talking about something like what, we don't know for sure how many gay players are out there. We have a pretty good idea how many people used that content in Dragon Age Origins and Dragon Age 2. And I think we were getting telemetry for Dragon Age Inquisition. Telemetry being when people play games, unless they opt out and say, no, I'm not going to send information, it just sends, you know, non-identifying information that tells us what choices they were making as they played the game. So we have a pretty good idea what sort of percentage of players was using gay content. And you don't, but that doesn't mean anything about them, right? And like the percentage of people that were doing the lesbian romances,
mm-hmm.
was much, much higher than that doing the male gay romances. But what does that mean? Does it mean there we have more lesbians playing the game, or does it mean that there are straight men who enjoy doing the lesbian romances as well? I don't actually know.
Yeah.
So you could interpret that lots of ways. But I mean, it is a minority either way. So I think that many companies just do one of two things: either think it's not worth it, or just simply don't think about it.
On that note of LGBT themes that were in Dragon Age in particular, BioWare received quite the amount of vitriol for some members of the community in regards to the LGBT themes in Dragon Age.
Right.
How did you in particular handle such criticism?
Well, there's always going to be a certain amount, right? And it comes disguised in various ways. Some people try to objectify their opinion and say, no, it's just not good gameplay or various things. And some of it's just right out, oh, well, games have never been about these issues, so why should they include these issues now? I think my response has generally been, from a completely mercenary perspective,
mm-hmm.
you have a company that's making games, that games which have been getting increasingly more expensive as they people, you know, anyone who out there who doesn't really know much about games, if you just see the commercials on TV of the latest games that come out there, they're very realistic and really like movies. They just slowly cost more and more to make. You have games costing, you know, as much as the latest blockbuster, hundreds of millions of dollars to mm-hmm. make a big game. Therefore, they need an audience. They need to reach an audience that's as big as possible. So, from a completely mercenary perspective, it's trying to reach a wider audience than just the 18 to 25 year old, you know, dudes who really don't have the deepest pocketbooks anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that element of it. Yes, the reaching out to a larger audience, but then there's also an element of, you know, not every game's going to have things like relationships or, you know, the ability to even discuss or display sexuality in any way. But if you do, sort of limiting it to like, okay, we're only going to have straight romances in a game that includes romances. If you're not straight yourself and you're playing, it suddenly becomes very apparent to you who this game is actually for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really exclusionary. So it's like when somebody comes in and says, oh, you shouldn't do this. It's like, well, here I have two different groups of people that want something. So these some people who just want to be included in a game that they love, and others that want to exclude others. And between those two, the ones that aren't that want to be exclude other people, they're the ones I'm going to disregard, right? And that's basically how I and BioWare have always maintained it.
Excellent. Going on, how do you believe the industry can cater better to the LGBT community and other minorities?
I mean, it varies. I just think that if it happened more often, and I think it is, but if we had more games that were including it just as a matter of course,
mm-hmm.
Then I think it just wouldn't be that much of an issue. I mean, that's really where I'd like to get it. I mean, I remember for Dragon Age Inquisition, we did this thing where we were talking about the various characters we included, the major characters. And I remember one of the characters I wrote, Dorian, he's a gay man. And in his the interview I did regarding him, there were like 15 questions where I go into his background. He's from a place called Tevinter, and he wants to clean it up, basically. It's sort of an evil empire. And the last question was, is there anything about this character you'd like to say? And I said, well, you know, it's the first, you know, gay character I've written. And I thought that was pretty cool. The others have been bisexuals. And this is the first time I could write something that was really close to home. And of course that became this big, like from the perspective of people who did, you know, really hate this kind of content.
Mm-hmm.
It's like BioWare held a press conference just to announce they had a gay character. Like we were trying to score points with somebody. And anything else I might have said about the character was, you know, made, you know, irrelevant as far as they were concerned. So it seems like, you know, I just like to be able to do an interview like that and have people really not focus so much on one aspect. And I think the only way you're going to get that to that is by exposure. Just get these people used to having...
prefer the industry to reach the point where it just expected that there are gay characters in a game because there are gay people in life.
Right. And I don't even think it needs to be things like, you know, the giant romances that BioWare writes.
Mm-hmm.
Just as much as, like, you know, you meet a character and instead of having a wife, he has a husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like... And it can be small things like that, and they just need to pop up every now and again, and eventually the dude bros that focus so much, like they say, as soon as they see it, it's like somebody was trying to say, I don't mind it, but I just wish it wasn't that deliberate and in my face, like you're trying to shove it down my throat. That is, in fact, that is the analogy they use every time. Don't even talk
to me. It's really questionable.
Yeah, it's like you just keep shoving it down my throat. It's like, what is this imagery you have in your head?
You keep using that phrase.
Yeah,
you seem to enjoy.
You seem to enjoy that phrase a lot. I think it's more, it says more about them, right? Because they're noticing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's there and it's like it jumps out at them and then that's all they can see. It's like, well, I'm sure if they just get used to it, it will stop jumping out at them and they can just go on with their lives. Because it's like if a character is the default, if mm-hmm. you're a straight, white, male, they don't need to explain any of those things. But as soon as any character is anything else, it's like they need a reason. And it's not just the people who play the game. Sometimes it's the developers themselves. It's mm-hmm. like they've got to conjure a plot reason why this character can be black. Well, or, you know, why this character's being gay is really important. I mean, I guess you could say that with, I did that with Dorian too. I mean, his being gay was a part of his background. It affected his story. But then we had another character, a lesbian named Sarah, that her being gay did not affect, you know, didn't really affect anything at all. So
not in the slightest. I wasn't aware that she was for the longest time, yeah, because I always played males.
But it's like, and I don't think that that necessarily needs to be the case. I mean, we need the Sarahs and the Dorians, mm-hmm, right? Dorian was the first chance I could include a story that was specific to a character that was gay. And Sarah was just gay, just as part of her character. And, you know, if you weren't a woman, probably you weren't even that aware of it. Although she would drop comments. So it wasn't like she was only gay if you were interested, right?
Yeah, she'd make, like, obtuse, like, ugh, comments to, yes, the male ones if you tried to flirt with her or anything.
Yes.
Oh, she was a great character. Sorry. Regarding... Oh, I had somewhere to go on that. yeah, I was on a diversity panel at RTX.
Yes.
And I talked quite a bit about Assassin's Creed Syndicate, because it has a much more diverse range of casts than Assassin's Creed is actually used to.
Okay.
And we had a guy come up to ask a question, but it was really just a statement about how he felt as a straight white male about the whole situation of minorities being included. And he's right, like, it just feels like they're just there as tokens. And like, even if they are tokenistic, or you feel they're tokenistic, they're still beneficial to everyone that they're representing. Yeah. So there was an Indian character, and you had a female protagonist, and these are all things that they'll just be white men otherwise, and that's just boring.
Yeah, I remember the one thing the Gamergators seem to like to pretend they're doing. Just for anybody out there who doesn't know what Gamergate is, it's a group of
man babies.
They're not all men, but they really, their ostensible purpose is to save the industry from the forces of political correctness,
mm-hmm,
as they claim that people who keep demanding everybody be politically correct, or that games have more inclusivity, that this demand is our shackles upon the creators, that, mm-hmm, we're being restricted, and we only do these things because we're frightened of the repercussion, that, you know, people will yell at us, although apparently we're not afraid of them yelling at us. So apparently, I don't know why we'd be more afraid of the forces of social justice yelling at us than them, but whatever, that seems to be what they believe. But it's like, from a creator's perspective, we have the chance now to have more variety in our characters than we've ever had. That is a freedom that we have not previously enjoyed. I mean, we still don't fully get it, because I mean, the there are various forces like marketing that sort of limit what we can include. However, it's no longer default beyond a question. There is a question. There's a conversation now, and sometimes you get the opportunity to do other things. And so, having that freedom as a creator means a lot. And I mean, yes, sometimes it might seem tokenistic if you have just the, sort of the one in the cast, but I don't know. I'm sure people might say otherwise, but between having token minorities and having no minorities, I'll take tokens as a first step.
Could not have agreed more. a bit of a tone change here.
Sure.
My next question up on the board is, what has been your favorite celebrity to work with?
There's been a few. I would say Claudia Black. She did the voice for Morgan.
Amazing.
Yeah. She did the voice for Morgan in Dragon Age Origins and Dragon Age Inquisition. And she's great. And as a matter of fact, she was the first celebrity I got to work with. When we were doing, started the recording for Dragon Age Origins, they brought me down to Los Angeles to meet with a number of the voice actors so we could do the first session or two and help them find their voice.
Mm-hmm.
And once they found the voice, then I can go back to Edmonton and then they can continue, because the Dragon Age Origins, I think they had like 25, 26 sessions each for the major characters. So I went down, and the first actor I was meeting was Claudia Black, and I was very excited because I'd watched Farscape and I was a big fan. My voice director had told me before I sat down, she gave me some pointers on talking to celebrities, and one of the things she said is, whatever you do, don't compare them to other actors. I was like, okay. And of course, when I sat down to talk to Lottie, she's like, "So, what's this character about?" And I you know, I was so starstruck, I just kind of drew a blank. And so the first thing I said was, "Well, when I first started writing the character, the voice I had in my head was Helena Bonham Carter."
Boom, dropped an actor.
And she looked at me, and very seriously, she said, "So what you're saying is that I'm a very cheap version of Helena Bonham Carter." And I was just aghast. I was so mortified. I couldn't even speak. And she let me stew for like 10 seconds as I'm like, And then she just burst out laughing. And she was, she's so perversely wicked. I was flustered throughout the rest of the conversation. And then when we had this session, she's in the booth and it's a soundproof booth. And in order for anybody to talk to her, the director has to press a button to speak to her. So she would do her lines, and I would lean over to the director and give them a note. And he would buzz in, and then Claudia would say, "Oh, does he want me to do it more like Helena?" And I would just like, bang my head on the desk again. And I met her years later when we did more sessions, and I was sure she'd forgotten. And I walk in the room and introduce myself. She's like, "Oh, you don't need to introduce yourself. You're the one who wanted me to be more like Helena." I'm like, "I can't believe you remember that. Oh, my God."
5 years on, still getting you with it.
But she's great. I love her. We got to know each other in San Diego 1 year at the con there, and she's just the loveliest person.
She seems amazing.
Yeah, yeah, she really is.
I first knew her in Stargate is where.
Ah, yeah, yeah. From.
After that was a bit after Farscape.
Yes.
Closed its doors.
Yeah, her and Ben Browder got to reunite.
Yes, they had a joke on that on Stargate at one point.
Did they?
I digress.
Yes.
Another question. So, have any of your characters been based on people you know?
Not specifically. I actually, not on the people, but I do sometimes steal some of their characters.
Okay.
We do a bit of tabletop role playing, or play LARPs. Actually, I've run a few LARPs, live action role playing. Mm-hmm. I've never taken a character and that's the one I'm using, but I have stolen kind of their names or sort of a few things about them.
It's like, ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one. I'm going to use that. And they're always very delighted.
Oh, that's good.
there is a couple times where I've sort of, rather than hear somebody I know, I've sort of taken a composite of various things. Like I've had a friend of mine say, "You know, this character, it's not in all ways, but some of the things they say, is that me?" And I'm like, "Yeah. Yeah, totally is."
Love it. That's good.
Yeah.
So, do you have any notable examples off the top of your head that we would know?
Talking about the characters they played would be meaningless to you.
That's true.
So, like, you ever had somebody talk about their D&D campaign? It's the most boring thing in the entire universe.
I have to try and not do that. I only just started and it's so fun.
But Dorian is a kind of a composite of a few friends of mine.
And, oh, that's cool.
It's kind of funny because, I mean, there's some people that say, like, "Oh, he's a negative gay stereotype." And I'm like, "How?"
He's incredible.
Well, some people seem to think that if a gay character is effeminate at all, that's not acceptable. And I'm just like, but, you know, there's lots of friends I have that are, you know, you call them flaming queers if you want, but they are feminine, and it's like, are they not acceptable for public consumption? Mm-hmm. Do gay characters have to be straight acting in order to be acceptable by the public? I don't even know. I think that goes back to the tokenism thing. One benefit we had when we were in Inquisition is we had enough queer characters spread throughout the game that we were then free to give them unlikable qualities, you know, or negative, or just, you know, not. If you have this, that this character is, they have this one character that's supposed to represent basically. Mm-hmm. Like they have to be the perfect in every way. They have to be superhuman, because, you know, any flaw or any negative quality they have is suddenly a projection of, you know, like, it's like you're saying a statement about that type of character, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have like a bit of broader representation in the game, suddenly it's like, oh, okay. we don't have to worry. Like Sarah, for instance, Sarah's a lesbian, but we had other lesbians in the game as NPCs, non-player characters as well. That weren't even in your party. The Empress of Orlais, really important story character, is a lesbian. Things like that. So I felt she was free to be potentially unlikable. There's some people that really don't like Sarah. It's like, that's totally okay.
That's great.
She doesn't have to be a pillar of morality and the community. She can just be a character.
Now, I had a few questions from Facebook from your fans.
Okay.
Quick and easy one first up.
Okay.
Team Fenris or Team Anders? Dragon Age 2 question.
I can't be on a team. I mean, if the question is like, who would I romance? I totally would not. These characters are kind of like my children. I'm okay with knowing that they have a sex life. I just don't want any details.
There we go. Feel bad whoever asked that question.
I mean, I guess I wrote their romance, but that's different. There's definitely me, the romance as it stands when I write it, and then the character they become once it's released, and now they're sort of in the public domain. What they do out in the public domain, you know, they can go down to Tijuana and get shit-faced and
that's their problem.
That's their problem. I just don't want to read the fanfic. That's all.
So okay, well I'll change the question slightly.
Sure.
If you're going to ship one of them with default Hawk, which okay. one would you push in?
Well, Fenris, obviously, because I wrote him.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Easy. Another one. Non-video game influences. So tabletop or board games have influenced your life?
Well, tabletop. I mean, that's what got me my job at BioWare.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, really. I mean, I started with Dungeons & Dragons. This is like back in the day. I started with the basic box set that my parents gave me for Christmas.
Sorry, it's just so alien to me these days.
My mom gave me and my brother both the Dungeons and Dragons for Christmas, and so that's way, way back, and I went all the way right back up into Advanced D&D, the first edition or second edition, and so I knew lots about it, and then I really hadn't played D&D by the time I started with BioWare, but they were doing Baldur's Gate 2,
mm-hmm.
Which was a Dungeons and Dragons based game, and they needed more writers, so they asked if anybody there knew somebody who A, knew how to write, but B, knew a lot about Dungeons and Dragons, and one of my friends put me forward without even telling me. I got this call out of the blue. It was very strange. But yeah, and when they brought me in, I don't know if it was my writing so much, just I had this in-depth nerd knowledge, and even though I hadn't played Dungeons and Dragons forever, I mean, I could just recite things that I wasn't even aware were still in my memory. It's like, who's the god of the Kuotoa? Well, Blibdoolpoop, of course. How do I know that?
This is an absolutely killer origin story. So this complete coincidence, due to your nerd cred, you got into a job at BioWare.
Yeah. I mean, I turned it down.
Oh.
Yeah. It was offered to me, and I had a job running a hotel, which was twice the money. And BioWare, their old office, it looked very fly-by-night, ductwork hanging on the ceiling. It's like, this place is shifty. They could close down. So I actually turned them down. But I went into my hotel after the weekend, and it was announced that they got bought out by a larger company, and mm-hmm. I was let go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, I guess I will try that job.
Well, yeah. Happy coincidence.
Yeah, it worked
out. Coincidence got us here and all these amazing games.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, just a few questions to close up. Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for people who are LGBT and looking into joining the gaming industry?
That's tough. I mean, not every company is BioWare.
Mm-hmm. It is true.
I wouldn't go into it with the assumption that every company is going to be full of it's going to have this fratmosphere with a bunch of woo boys running around. I mean, no, not every company is like that. But how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
You don't. I mean, even in companies that are more progressive, you could have that one boss. But if you're LGBT, you're generally used to that anyway. I just would say, don't let it discourage you. Go ahead and try. And otherwise than that, it's just a matter of getting a job like anybody else who gets a job at a company. I mean, you could do some research.
Mm-hmm.
You could try seeing if there's any people from that company on Twitter or Facebook, whether they were there previously or there now, and sort of hit them up and say, hey, what's the weather conditions like? How good would it be for somebody who's LGBT working there?
Watch out for the devs that sponsor GX. They're the good ones to look for.
Exactly.
And just on the other side of the coin, any advice for budding writers trying to get their foot out there?
Good luck. not a lot of game companies actually employ full-time writers. So if you're trying to get into writing, it's going to be difficult. Chances are you're going to be better off developing some other skills as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like game design is a good one. Even programming. I know Bethesda has a number of their programmers who do their writing as well. So you can do it that way. But if you're bound and determined, it's not like it can't happen. I just would say that the only way to do it is to do it. Write. Mod. A really good way to get into to do it is with Twine. A utility that allows people to write and to, because that allows you to demonstrate. Because it's like, I've had so many people that have come to me and say, I want to be a game writer. And I'm like, well, learn how to mod. And they're like, oh, that seems like a lot of work. and they don't say that, but that's sort of the air they give off. And I'm like, yes.
Damn, I was hoping it would be easy.
Yeah, working in the game industry is, in fact, a lot of work. And there will be days where you will have long, long hours. There will be tasks that are tedious, that take months. And that's just what you have to put up with. And if you can demonstrate to the people that are intent to hire you that you already have an idea of what that involves, that you have your leg up.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much for joining me today. It was very lovely to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
This has been a Joycast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9. If you like this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.